In the matters of State versus Byrd and State versus Ferguson and Potts, can we please have appearances of counsel? Welcome, counsel. Ms. Hunt.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May I please the court? I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal on the Ferguson and Potts matter, if necessary. The three defendants in this case were all charged under the strict liability for drug-induced death statute for their respective roles in the distribution of heroin that led to the tragic overdose death of their victim. The conduct of each of these defendants is precisely the type of conduct that the legislature sought to punish when enacting this statute, the distribution of deadly drugs. At the grand jury stage, the state is required to present only some evidence as to each element of the offense, and this standard was undoubtedly satisfied with respect to the material elements of the drug-induced death offense. That is, the distribution of heroin, the victim's use of that heroin, and the victim's death caused by the use of that heroin. Yet each of these defendants seeks to escape liability for their actions simply because the heroin that Ferguson and Potts bought from Mr. Byrd in Patterson was finally handed off to the victim across state lines. None of them are entitled to this relief. Under our jurisdiction statute, the state has jurisdiction to prosecute any offense as long as the conduct or the result, which is an element offense, occurs within this state. For each defendant in this case, the state established a prima facie case that the conduct that is an element of the drug-induced death offense, that is, the distribution of heroin, occurred in New Jersey, though for different reasons. For Ferguson and Potts, the distribution element was satisfied by their actions in New Jersey because their actions in coming to New Jersey every 2 days, buying a full brick of heroin, and returning to New York with a purpose to distribute that heroin was a substantial step towards the ultimate transfer of the heroin to the victim. In other words, their actions in New Jersey were an attempted transfer. And because an attempted transfer is a completed distribution under the statutory definitions of distribution and delivery, Ferguson and Potts' substantial step in this state was a distribution in this state. The motion judge and appellate division were therefore wrong to conclude that the distribution element was not satisfied in New Jersey simply because the final handoff occurred in New York. Distribution is more than just the moment drugs change hands. It encompasses the transaction as a whole, including the acts in furtherance of the final transfer. And because the state presented some evidence of attempted transfer occurring in the state, the judge erred in dismissing the drug-induced death count against Ferguson and Potts for lack of territorial jurisdiction. Now, with respect to the defendant Byrd, the reason the distribution element was satisfied in New Jersey is different. While Ferguson and Potts are liable because of their distribution directly to the victim, Byrd is liable for his distribution to Ferguson and Potts. And because this distribution unquestionably occurred in New Jersey, the state has jurisdiction to prosecute him for the drug-induced death offense. The plain language of the statute makes clear that any person who distributes drugs is liable for the deaths resulting from the use of those drugs. In enacting this statute, the legislature specifically intended to impose broad liability on every person in the distribution chain, from manufacturers all the way down to the final link in the chain who distributes directly to the victim. Byrd was only one step removed from the victim in this case and falls squarely within the reach of the statute. And because his act of distribution occurred in New Jersey, the state has jurisdiction to prosecute him, even though the victim used heroin and died in New York. Finally, subsection B of the jurisdiction statute does not strip the state of jurisdiction in this case because the conduct charged, as used in that section, refers to the conduct that is an element of the offense, and not the offense as a whole. In the case of the drug-induced death statute, the conduct charge is the distribution, and because distributing heroin is indeed illegal in New York, this exception does not apply. Because the state presented evidence that each defendant committed distribution in New Jersey, the state established jurisdiction as to each defendant and should be permitted to proceed to trial on the drug-induced death count with respect to all three defendants.
Are you done with your opening statement?
Yes.
Can you clarify, and I think I understood your definition of conduct charge in Section B. Tell us again what that phrase means as you understand it.
The conduct charge referenced in Section B refers to the conduct that is an element of the offense, not the offense as a whole.
So you're using very specific language that appears elsewhere in the statute but does not appear in B. You're using the definitional language from A1. How can you do that?
Because the reference made in subsection B to the conduct charged, while it may not specify that it's the element of the offense, it certainly does not refer to the offense as a whole. If the legislature had intended to refer to the offense as a whole, they certainly could have done that.
But if the legislature had meant to refer to conduct that is an element of offense, it would have repeated the same articulation that it had in A1. Isn't this different language in B suggestive that they were talking about the offense as a whole?
No, the fact that it references the conduct charged doesn't necessarily have to overlap with the conduct that is an element of the offense. It's possible that the conduct charged could incorporate more than one element of the offense. But what is clear is that the legislature throughout this statute repeatedly distinguished between conduct, result, and offense as a whole. And where the reference is made to the conduct charge, there's really no reason to assume that the legislature intended to refer to the offense as a whole.
You don't think that one reasonable interpretation of conduct charged in this case is the strict liability drug-induced death? That's the conduct charge? Why isn't that one reasonable, plausible, at least one reasonable, plausible interpretation of what that means?
Because there's nothing in that language itself that actually refers to the offense. The
conduct
language
charged. He's charged with the con. If I'm just parsing the meaning of those two words, conduct charged with the conduct that led to this strict liability offense.
Yes, but that doesn't necessarily incorporate. By referring to the conduct charge, that doesn't also incorporate the result that is charged as well, which in the case of the strict liability drug-induced death offense leaves you really with just the distribution, which is the conduct.
But leave the conduct charge where the conduct charge would not constitute an offense. The conduct charge. And here, all we're talking about is whether or not these defendants are guilty of this strict liability drug-induced death.
Yes, but the jurisdiction statute can't simply be interpreted with specific regard to the drug-induced death statute.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The understanding of the conduct charge language has to be considered with respect to any offense, not simply the drug-induced death offense. So by referencing conduct charge, it can't be presumed that just because in the context of a strict liability offense that the conduct charge is really meant to refer to the offense as a whole.
Go ahead, Chief.
Take a charge that has five elements. Are you suggesting that if any one of those elements, could satisfy the Section B concern here? Because that wouldn't even make sense logically. The element might not itself constitute an offense. You wouldn't even be able to apply the exception then.
I think a reasonable interpretation of the conduct charge language would refer to the conduct as a whole that constitutes the offense. So whatever conduct it is that is required to complete the offense, whether that's divided into one element or two, may vary from statute to statute, but where...
So if it's two elements, do both have to happen in New Jersey in order to establish jurisdiction?
No, because under subsection A1, it just requires that the conduct that is an element of the offense, occurs in the state. So where a specific offense requires more than one act, one act alone is sufficient to establish jurisdiction under A1.
Is it a reasonable... getting out of the weeds and just looking at it from a little bit of approach, isn't the whole purpose of this portion of the statute to say that we're not going to convict someone in New Jersey of an offense here for something that New York doesn't consider an offense. So they will not convict someone for this, but we're going to convict a person for it. And this statute is saying unless the legislature plainly expresses a reason otherwise, we're just not going to do that. So if they decriminalize something, it seems to me the statute is saying that we're not going to convict the person here for committing that decriminalized offense in New York. Isn't that what that statute is saying?
Well, that's where the state maintains an interest in prosecuting conduct that occurs in this state, even when the result may occur in a different state that doesn't necessarily prosecute that conduct. Where the conduct occurs here, the state's interest remains here. And with respect to the final kind of portion of that subsection, where the legislative purpose plainly appears to declare the conduct criminal regardless of the place of the result, in the context of the drug-induced death statute, given that it is a strict liability offense, given the legislative history of that...
You may still win based on the exception to the exception.
Exactly, right. Yes. Okay. just because of the legislative history of the offense itself, and simply the strict liability nature of it goes to show that the legislature really intended to prosecute the conduct regardless of where the result occurs.
So I'm looking at the declarations of policy, 2C35.1.1, and the legislature isn't talking about protecting the people of the United States or the several states. The New Jersey, New York metropolitan. It says pervasive threat to the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of this state. I'm looking at the B portion. New Jersey continues to experience an unacceptably high rate of drug, and it goes on. Doesn't mention anything about the legislature's concerns about those problems in Pennsylvania or any other state.
Well, the legislature's concern is with the risk posed by distribution itself. Those risks, while they do include, obviously, the death that is charged in the drug-induced death offense, aren't limited to that. Drug distribution is a problem in the state regardless of where the result of that offense may occur. It's the distribution itself that causes harm to this state by kind of furthering these distribution schemes.
But the statute, I'm looking at now 1.3, the territorial jurisdiction, unless a legislative purpose plainly appears to declare the conduct criminal regardless of the place of the result. So our drug-induced statute would have to plainly say we intend to prosecute people for drug-induced deaths that not only occur in New Jersey, but also in states that don't criminalize it. And where do we find that in the legislation, and particularly given the legislative findings that are in 35-1.1.
Well, I would disagree respectfully that under that subsection it requires that the offense specifically state that they intend to prosecute the conduct regardless of whether the result is also an offense in the other state. Sorry, I think there's nothing in that portion that requires that a specific offense state in such express terms that the state intends to continue prosecuting these offenses regardless of the place of result. I think by reference to the legislative purpose, it almost goes to show that it doesn't that looking into the language of the specific offense statute isn't required.
Doesn't it say legislative purpose plainly appears and not to state?
Yes, it does. But the legislative purpose is not only expressed through the language of the statute itself. As Your Honor noted, there's an entire section that includes declarations and findings by the legislature. There's an extensive legislative history that discusses the state's interest in these types of cases. So I think the reference to the legislative purpose plainly appearing does not require that the offense statute itself specifically state this kind of continued interest in prosecution.
Ms. Hunt, in addition to the point that the Chief raised before, that conduct charged in B is different language than just conduct that appears in A, don't we have to also consider that everything that appears antecedent to it is also sweeping in result. So if conduct charged is not the equivalent of conduct as an element of the offense, but is something more, sweeping in a more comprehensive term of conduct and result that are intertwined, wouldn't that also be a sensible interpretation of this provision?
Well, I'm not sure that everything kind of leading up to that point really does sweep conduct and result in together when only referring to conduct.
It's talking about causing a result or purpose to cause a result, and afterward it's talking about regardless of the place of the result. So it does seem to be considering the totality of the conduct and the result, which here we're dealing with a drug-induced death. You still have the exception to the exception in the latter part of the statute, but
yes.
I'm just offering that there's another reason why I believe the Chief's point and the one that I'm raising suggests that conduct charge is not the equivalent of just any element of the offense.
I guess, and it's, perhaps I'm missing the specific instances where everything is swept up, but my understanding is that by repeatedly distinguishing between the conduct and the result, it's possible I'm missing the section that you're referring to. I don't see any other place where the statute refers to the conduct intending to refer to the offense as a whole, where the distinction is made between result and conduct. I think that result kind of stands.
I'm suggesting that conduct charge is a more descriptive term as opposed to a term of art that's equivalent to conduct, which is an element of the offense.
I mean, I guess I would disagree that there's different interpretations there, but I understand that the court may disagree.
Okay.
Am I correct that New York will not prosecute for drug-induced death, strict liability? They have no such statute.
They have no such statute.
So they cannot they will not prosecute for the crime that they committed in their jurisdiction, but the state's argument is that we can do it because it started here.
Yes. Because the interests of the two states don't necessarily overlap. Well, the New York legislature may not have found it, and they haven't in fact tried to pass legislation, but where the New York legislature hasn't succeeded in doing so, that doesn't mean that this state loses its interest in prosecuting that offense. The concern that the drug-induced death statute is meant to address is the concern of widespread distribution and the widespread effects of that distribution. It's not just because New York may not consider this an interest worth prosecuting does not mean that New Jersey does not, especially given the statute.
Go ahead, Justice Patterson.
How specific does the legislative statement or statement of legislative purpose have to be in order to meet the exception to the exception? In other words, it says that a legislative purpose plainly appears to declare that the conduct criminal regardless of the place of the result. Does that mean that the legislature has to say, and we intend this to criminalize this conduct even if the victim who dies in a different state? Or can it be more general?
I think it can certainly be more general. I think that if this language specifically meant to require an express declaration of this purpose, then that's what it would have required. But by requiring only that the purpose plainly appears, it shows that it's not just an express statement that's required, it's more than that. It's a consideration of the legislative purpose as a whole and whether from that legislative purpose, including the statutory declarations, including the legislative history, whether from that as a whole the purpose plainly appears, not simply on the face of the statute.
But it has to be, the purpose plainly appears is not just the purpose the legislature has in enacting the statute, which is to deter distribution of drugs that may be potentially lethal, but a purpose for essentially an extraterritorial jurisdiction-related purpose, is it not?
Yes, that is what this subsection refers to, but by enacting a strict liability in addition to all of the other kind of expressions of the legislative purpose, simply by enacting a strict liability statute, the legislature has indirectly expressed its interest in prosecuting the offense, kind of regardless of how we actually get to the result.
That's well, it seems to be a little bit of a difficult area in between, because you can have, certainly you can have a legislative purpose to deter the conduct and obviously impose significant penalties if someone dies, but if you're just gleaning from that, well, that must mean that wherever the person dies should be included because the legislature feels strongly about that purpose and therefore it should cover more cases. What do you see that specifically evinces legislative intent, which it has to say plainly appears, that someone dying in a different state be included?
There is nothing that explicitly states that. Certainly, but from the totality of the legislative history and the purpose, not only in enacting this statute, but kind of in enacting the CDRA as a whole, I think from that it can be gleaned that the legislature intended this statute to apply broadly.
So break it down a little bit more and help us on this area. What are you relying on from the legislative scheme, from particular statutes that comprises this totality argument? It's a strict liability statute is number one. What else?
The recognition in the declarations of policy that in order to be effective, the battle against drug abuse has to be waged at every level, including every level along the distribution chain. In the official commentary to the drug-induced death statute, the legislature notes that it's putting manufacturers and distributors clearly on notice that they operate in the state at their peril with respect to the risk that death may result from their illegal activities. And finally, the Assembly Judiciary Committee statement stating that the intent of the statute is to hold drug distributors strictly liable for any deaths proximately resulting from their illegal distribution activities. The references, kind of the broad references to any death, to this expansive interest of the state, from all of those sources and the strict liability nature of the statute itself.
So you've read some broad language. Shouldn't we be looking at specific language? Pervasive threat to the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of this state. And then it's New Jersey continues to, and it's New Jersey-centric with respect to that. Shouldn't the specificity win the day over the general statement surrounding it?
Perhaps, but in an instance such as this where kind of the specificity refers to the perils of distribution and to drugs in the state, yes, it does refer to the effects on the citizens of the state. It's the effects also of the distribution and the widespread availability of deadly drugs.
So let's say you have an argument, okay, but there's another argument. But the statute says the legislative purpose has to plainly appear. And as long as there are two arguments, then that cannot be the case. Would you concede that?
Not necessarily, I don't think.
I'm not asking you to give up your case.
you mentioned that the battle has to be waged every level. Tell me if I'm wrong. I thought that referred to every level of a drug distribution chain. And perhaps somebody a little higher up would be within that statute based on strict liability. Isn't that what that level? It's not really so much the geographic levels or expanding geographically. It's really talking about the structure of an organization, is it not?
Yes, I believe it is. But I think that even kind of further supports our position, which is that if the state has an interest in holding manufacturers responsible for their manufacturing in the state, regardless of kind of where the drugs go from there, it just further goes to show that the legislature is interested in ensuring that drug manufacturing and distribution in the state is wiped out, regardless of where its specific effects may occur, its effects are widespread. Regardless of whether a death occurs in one state or another, just the continuation of this of.
So it would apply. Look, the problem here, I think, for the state is this drug-induced death statute that New York doesn't have. Like, New York has manslaughter, we have manslaughter. Had you charged, if there were sufficient evidence to charge Byrd and the others with manslaughter, then you wouldn't have a problem under the B. It's the fact that you're proceeding under a statute that New York doesn't hold likewise criminal. That's the problem for the state here. Am I correct?
I mean, I guess I would disagree that it's a problem, but yes, that is the difference. Is that because New York and New Jersey both share manslaughter, and we don't share the drug-induced death offense. That is a significant difference between the two. But I think under the kind of exception to the exception under subsection B, still applies.
Ms. Hunt, in the legislative declarations under subsection B, where the legislature was explaining what concerned it and why it was taking the actions it was taking, it says New Jersey continues to experience an unacceptably high rate of drug-related crime and continues to serve as the conduit for illegal trafficking of drugs to and from other jurisdictions. So in that sentence, isn't the legislature signaling that they see a way to curb activity within our state by deterring trafficking of drugs to other jurisdictions? And therefore, this is part of this overall scheme that the legislature was putting together by imposing strict liability at higher levels of echelons in trafficking organizations, manufacturers, distributors, who put into motion drug sales that result in drug-induced death, no matter where they are in the chain. Doesn't that sentence help your argument?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it certainly does. I think it's absolutely a further recognition of the legislature's broad interest in deterring the manufacturing and distribution of drugs.
And it directly ties the legislature's concern and desire to improve conditions in New Jersey, because it, even though it also has an effect on outside jurisdictions by deterring that marketplace.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Would you like to talk about defendants Potts and Ferguson a little bit before your colleagues spend a good deal of time on that?
Absolutely. The reason that Ferguson and Potts are held responsible under the Drug Abuse Death Statute is different from Byrd. They are held responsible whereas Byrd was kind of indirectly, was an indirect distributor. Ferguson and Potts distributed directly to the victim here. And their actions in New Jersey in coming into the state, in buying a large quantity of drugs every 2 days, and in turning back towards the New York border with the intent to distribute those drugs, was a substantial step towards the ultimate transfer. And what the definition of kind of distribution through delivery makes clear is that it is not just the actual transfer of drugs that constitutes a distribution. It is the actual constructive or attempted transfer of drugs that constitutes a distribution. And where their actions in the state constitute a substantial step towards that ultimate distribution, it is an attempted transfer and therefore a completed distribution.
What specifically is the attempted transfer, factually?
It's kind of the totality of their actions in the state in coming here and in buying a large quantity of drugs that is for more than personal use.
Let me clarify. Are you suggesting that the purchase in New Jersey is an attempted transfer to the individual in New York?
It's not just the purchase in New Jersey. It is the purchase in New Jersey. I mean, yes, it could be, but I think there's a lot more here than just the purchase in New Jersey. It's the purchase of such a large quantity of drugs from which the grand jury could clearly infer that they are buying that for more than personal use, and in fact for distribution to other people, including identified buyers, so that they're not kind of putting out this huge amount of cash and risking not getting it back, given that they're buying a full brick every 2 days. And all of that together with them then turning back towards the New York border with this purpose to distribute drugs is in New Jersey, is a substantial step towards the ultimate transfer in New Jersey.
So if they got on a plane instead and traveled someplace else, far away, same argument?
Yes. Where the evidence is the same as here, where there is evidence from which the grand jury can infer that they have, that their criminal purpose exists at the time they are in New Jersey, that they have the purpose to distribute while they're here, and that they take concrete steps towards that distribution in this state, yes, regardless of whether it may be New York or someplace farther.
So what are the parameters? Let's say they rent the car at Newark Airport and take it across, don't have the drugs, take the car across the GW Bridge, buy drugs, and then move on to some other state, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and sell, and then the death happens there. Would you be arguing for jurisdiction in that case? Took a step, needed the car, rented the car.
It would depend on whether they have the criminal purpose in New Jersey.
Just assume that. I should have said that. They start their work day, got to go to the airport first, then we're going to go pick up the drugs in Manhattan, and then we're moving on.
I don't think it's as clear a case as it is here.
What if it's an out-of-state college student that purchases drugs to bring back to their university out of state in the Northeast and share with their friends, and somebody dies?
That would be covered. Yes, because they are buying the drugs in New Jersey with the express purpose of distributing them. So that they have taken a substantial step in this state towards the ultimate transfer to their friends.
Mm-hmm. Is there any case law that supports the theory you're suggesting right now, mm-hmm. the kind of prosecution that you're describing?
Not specifically in New Jersey, no. Attempted transfer is not a theory that is prosecuted very often, but in other contexts, the sort of actions that were taken in this state have been found to be enough to constitute an attempt in this state. In the appellate division case of State v. Sanford, while in this state, a mother intended to abandon her child in Philadelphia, got on a bus with that purpose, went to Philadelphia, and abandoned the child there. And the appellate division found that that was sufficient to constitute an attempted endangering in this state, simply because she got on a bus with the purpose of abandoning her child. And while obviously that is not a drug distribution case, I think that the same principles apply here.
Were Potts and Ferguson prosecuted for distribution in New York?
I can't speak to that.
But they're charged with possession with intent to distribute in this state, and Byrd is charged with distribution. It's not as though these folks aren't being prosecuted for some crimes. The only question is whether or not they're going to be prosecuted for the result of a drug-induced death in New York. Right? That's
right. But the fact that the state has an interest in prosecuting them for possession with intent and for distribution alone doesn't in any way reduce the state's interest in prosecuting them for the full extent of their actions, including the tragic result.
Anything else you'd like to add to your presentation?
I'd just like to say briefly that this idea that distribution is not a momentary crime is not a foreign idea. This is something that federal courts in State v. Brunty have recognized, United States v. Brunty have recognized. The distribution is not just the single moment when both hands are on the drugs and one person goes one way and one goes the other. Distribution is more than that. It is the steps leading up to it. It is the actions taken in furtherance of the final transfer. And that's what the state is looking to prosecute here, the actions that were taken in this state that led to the tragic death of a victim in New York.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. McLean, welcome back.
Your
Honors. Good afternoon, and may it please the Court. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, just if necessary. In my brief, I addressed the two subsections of the jurisdiction statute that were addressed by the Appellate Division, A1, which is this broad grant of jurisdiction, and subsection B, which takes away New Jersey's jurisdiction in certain circumstances. And because it's both the narrower issue and dispositive in Mr. Byrd's case, I'd like to focus my argument on subsection B, and I'll rely on my brief for the arguments about subsection A1. Because whether or not there's jurisdiction under A1, subsection B takes away that jurisdiction. So the narrow question for this court is whether New Jersey has jurisdiction over causing Cabral's death when New York does not consider that death to be a crime. And as the ACLU points out in their brief, there are valid reasons that New York would have chosen to not make Cabral's death a crime, to not have this offense of strict liability for causing a drug-induced death. New Jersey doesn't get to override New York's decisions on the best way to protect its citizens, in the same way as New York would not get to override a policy decision like that for New Jersey. New Jersey isn't allowed to turn this death into a crime by imposing its criminal law in another state that's made a different choice on the best way to protect its citizens. New Jersey does not have jurisdiction over the drug-induced death count, and it must be dismissed. That concludes my opening statement.
So how far does that argument extend with respect to the exception to the exception?
Okay, so under the exception to the exception, it has to be a legislative purpose that plainly appears to declare the conduct criminal regardless of the place of results. So it has to plainly appear. And New Jersey, our legislature, certainly intended the statute, the strict liability statute, to apply broadly, but there's no plain legislative purpose for it to apply extraterritorially.
So you interpret that exception to the exception as requiring not just the general policy and, you know, broad reach of a statute, but a specific statement of outside the jurisdiction deaths are included.
Yes, where New Jersey is trying to impose its criminal law on another state where what happened isn't a crime, that has to be explicit. The legislature has to have expressly considered and then decided to impose our criminal law.
So does the language of the statute call for an express statement?
No, it does not. It is intended to protect the citizens of New Jersey, and it's concerned with deaths that occur here.
I meant the language in B. I'm sorry. You said that the legislative purpose must be expressly stated, and I'm wondering where you get that from.
I read where the legislative purpose plainly appears to mean the legislature has to actually have considered this issue and made a decision about it.
So
in protecting New Jersey citizens, if a person purchases a couple of bags of heroin here in New Jersey, gets in his car, it's a student, drives to NYU, to Yale, gets to his dorm, uses the drugs, dies of an overdose, does New Jersey get to prosecute the seller?
Just to clarify, you've essentially taken
the sale took place in New Jersey. The use of the drug occurs extraterritorially.
Yes. That, again, under B, if the death occurs somewhere where the death is not a crime.
Okay, make it NYU then.
So then, yes. Then again, that's the same situation we're in here. The death is not a crime where it happened. And without our legislature specifically intending to and making that clear that they mean for that death to be a crime.
And you think the legislature did not intend to protect its citizens in that circumstance?
I think it certainly intended to protect its citizens from overdose deaths, and it certainly intended to criminalize drug trafficking. It does not appear from this legislative history or the language of the statute that it intends to punish deaths wherever they occur anywhere in the country. There's no...
Well, certain deaths, yes. If it was manslaughter, for instance, if there was heroin laced with some poison, take these facts, and then it's sold in New York, and a person dies, and you meet the definition of recklessness. New York recognizes manslaughter. We do. It would be prosecutable for manslaughter in the state. Do you agree?
Yes, but that's not that there the jurisdiction isn't happening under this exception to an exception.
No, I understand.
Yes, but so... But
because there's a synchronicity between the public policies of both states with respect to the criminal statutes.
Yes, where offenses are crimes in both states, then we don't have to we don't need this express legislative purpose. The reason the purpose has to be so clear and the legislature has to have expressly contemplated it is because we're trying to turn a death that's not a crime, that didn't happen here, into a crime. And that is what the legislature has to have plainly intended to do. And the legislative history does not do that.
Mm-hmm. The language used in Section B, plainly appears. Have you found that elsewhere?
Not in the research for this case. I'm not sure, not in the research for this case, but in the Model Penal Code, it contains similar language, and the focus of this exception to an exception is really, New Jersey has every right to punish deaths wherever they occur. They just have to be clear that that's what they meant to do. And we can't read that into a statute that doesn't say it.
We've been focusing on the language plainly appears, but is your argument bolstered even more by the fact that it doesn't say plainly appears to intend for the conduct to be criminal, but says to declare?
Yes, that does make the argument stronger because the
they're looking for a legislative declaration, something that is expressed as opposed to an intention that can be gleaned from other words. Correct?
Yes, and if the legislature wanted to do it, they could say so, and that wouldn't be up here challenging that. But there's no declaration, there's no express consideration of the extraterritorial application mm-hmm. of criminal law in this case.
So I don't want to harp on this, but it sounds as though the words appear to are being read out of your understanding of the exception to the exception.
So I don't mean to read out any of the words. I think they can be all read together. But the point of it is broad application of a criminal statute isn't enough. It has to be the extraterritorial application of that criminal statute that has to be contemplated. You can perhaps infer the declaration, but we don't have here what we
have. Are you also arguing that criminal statutes should be narrowly construed?
Certainly. The rule of lenity requires that criminal statutes be narrowly interpreted
Because the legislature expressed the intent or purpose specifically to protect its citizens, not its residents, its citizens. Do we now have a situation where if that student we refer to goes back to his dorm or her dorm in New York, ingests the drug sold to New Jersey and dies in New York, but that student's a citizen of New Jersey, does the statute now appear in that situation but not in the other situation where they're a New York resident or citizen?
That would be a closer case, I think.
Aren't we splitting hairs? I mean, aren't we sort of splitting what the purpose of the statute is by suggesting that?
No. I think if the statute had language along the lines of we intend to criminalize drug-induced deaths wherever they occur in the United States or wherever they occur, whether in New Jersey or outside of New Jersey.
Well, we only intend to do that if it's our citizens that are the ones that die.
Those are the broad purposes of the entire the set of drug laws that were promulgated along with this one, but the language has to be specific to the extraterritorial application of this statute. And wherever the line is, if it's a New Jersey citizen, it does make it a more interesting statutory interpretation question, but the purpose for the extraterritorial application of this statute has to plainly appear to declare the conduct criminal, and that's not the case here.
Do you know the source of the language in Section B?
Our statute is taken from the Model Penal Code, so the commentary to that, which I cite in my brief, I don't, not with respect to this exception to the exception, but those pages include the discussion of this. It.
And does it, does its commentary extend to the exception to the exception as well?
It does. I can find you the exact page in a second. It'll be page 44. So it says, it's discussing the exception to the exception. It says there are special cases where there's a legislative purpose to declare the conduct criminal regardless of the place of result, and subsection 2 becomes inoperative if such a legislative purpose plainly appears. But the legislature should focus on whether it wishes to accomplish the result for particular offenses, and if so, it should make that purpose clear. So that's, all of this is kind of fuzzy, but especially where it is a criminal statute that we're trying, that the state's trying to apply outside of its borders to something that is unquestionably a tragedy but isn't a crime where it happened, that purpose has to be much more explicit than it is here.
It's not a strict liability crime. It may be subject to manslaughter, but...
Correct. If there is any indication of that, this court's decision in this case is really narrowly, can be very narrowly tailored to the combination of strict liability for drug-induced death, where that offense isn't a crime, where it happened, and this jurisdiction statute under subsection B. Obviously, if an offense is an offense in New Jersey and in New York, both states would get to prosecute it. I would also point that there's a little bit more discussion that might help of this in Lefebvre Criminal Procedure. It's volume 4, section 16.4, and it's on pages 925 and 926. And essentially, here it's discussing the equivalent of subsection B, and it says, in general, if the illegal consequence is a crime in both jurisdictions, both have jurisdiction. But neither state has jurisdiction where the conduct is designed to achieve a consequence that would be criminal in the state of the conduct, but would not be criminal in the state of the consequence. And so that's what we have here. New Jersey thinks strict liability drug-induced deaths are a crime, but New York doesn't. And since that consequence occurred, neither state gets to prosecute for drug-induced death. Obviously, New Jersey has jurisdiction over the other 13 counts in the indictment, over the distributions, the school zone offenses, because those occurred in New Jersey, and New Jersey has jurisdiction, so it's up to the state to prove those. Just a couple of quick points talking about the first part of subsection B instead of the exception to the exception. The question really for this court is where the conduct charged would not constitute an offense means under the first part. And the plain language of that is clear because charged is modifying conduct. And in count 14 of the indictment, the defendants are charged with causing a drug-induced death. And this is easiest to see when comparing the counts of the indictment that charge distribution with count 14. The difference in the language, the distribution counts only include knowingly or purposely distributing a controlled dangerous substance, whereas count 14 includes both distributing a controlled dangerous substance, and Mr. Cabral did die as a result. So it includes both of these elements because both of these things are really the core of count 14. If the conduct charge just meant distribution, then this would be a much different indictment. The thing that makes count 14 a more serious offense is the death, and that death wasn't a crime where it took place. And then just very briefly, if the state's interpretation is correct and conduct means drug distribution, then this exception to the exception provision becomes nonsensical, because the exception, the last clause says, legislative purpose plainly appears to declare the conduct criminal regardless of the place of result. So if conduct is drug distribution, then this doesn't make any sense because drug distribution doesn't have a place of result. It's an act with a mens rea. So for these reasons, under subsection B, there's no jurisdiction because drugs were sold in New York to a New Yorker who died in New York where his death wasn't a crime. And New Jersey can't override New York's policy choices by imposing its criminal law in this case.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Montaneri. And I'm going to invite you and Mr. Neary to present succinct arguments on your position.
May it please the court. The court in State and DANAPA outlined the procedure in which jurisdictional issues should be addressed at the trial court. There are no facts in the record on which a rational trier of fact could conclude beyond a reasonable doubt that the crime was committed within the state. Parties should move and file a motion to dismiss, which was done in this case. The statute sets forth three elements for someone to be liable for strict liability for a drug-induced death. A person must distribute the drugs to someone, that person ingests or inhales those drugs, and that person dies as a result. In the instant matter, all of those elements happened in the state of New York. Cain Cabral bought drugs from Ferguson and Potts in Waldwick, New York. He ingested those drugs in Waldwick, New York, and he died in Waldwick, New York. None of these facts are contested by the state. The state argues, mentioned in her argument, that it was Potts and Ferguson's business model to every 2 days drive down to Patterson and buy a brick of heroin and go back and sell it. However, in the grand jury presentation, they offered no evidence that there was any agreement or conspiracy by Ferguson and Potts with Byrd to do so. There's no evidence that Mr. Byrd had any knowledge that Noel and Anthony would do with those drugs. In fact, Noel and Anthony didn't even know Mr. Byrd's name. He was referenced as homeboy, and they told the police he was homeboy, and in Ms. Ferguson's phone he was saved as homeboy because they did not know his name. It should be noted that after Ferguson and Potts bought the drugs, Mr. Byrd, they didn't go to New York to go sell those drugs. They went home. Mr. Cabral contacted Ferguson and Potts looking to purchase heroin. He called them again the next day to purchase more heroin. And then the following day, after that, April 3rd, he was found dead. The state argues the fact that they bought drugs in Patterson, that distribution is a continuing offense, and they rely on the case of United States v. Brunty. The logic in Brunty, the facts are distinguishable from this matter. To be brief about Brunty, Brunty, the defendant, met with an undercover police officer, bought drugs in one was made an agreement to buy drugs in one jurisdiction. They went to another jurisdiction, picked up the drugs. They drove back together to the original jurisdiction to make the money transfer, and at that point, Brunty was arrested. The judge in that matter stated that a jury could find that there was a continuous distribution here because the transaction was not completed. Brunty argued that he should be tried in the district to where he actually physically got the drugs. However, the court said the transaction was completed because the money was going back to the original jurisdiction. Also, that there was constructive possession by Brunty because he never left those drugs. He was always with them going back to the original jurisdiction. It's also, I'd like to point out, in this matter, it's different than Brunty. Brunty was always the same parties. It was the undercover police officer and Brunty. In this matter, Ferguson and Potts buy from Mr. Byrd. Their transaction, the money's exchanged, the drugs are exchanged, that is done. There's no agreement, there's no other, they're not agents of Mr. Byrd. They go back to New York, they go home. and they decide what to do with the drugs at that point. They sell to Mr. Cabral, money is exchanged, and that deal is done. Those are separate instances. Our proffer is that distribution is not a continuous crime. The argument by the state that in order to distribute drugs, you have to possess drugs, and for by Ferguson and Potts buying drugs in New Jersey, makes them capable of selling to distribute the drugs in New York. Distribution is an element of offense. Possession is not an element of the offense. By virtue of that logic, and as Justice had asked questions about that, where does that stop? If you have possession of drugs in New Jersey and you were to go to New York and they sold to Mr. Cabral and Mr. Cabral took those drugs and sold it to another state, where does New Jersey jurisdiction stop? Heroin and cocaine aren't made in Paterson, New Jersey. So on the flip side of that argument, Mr. Byrd didn't cultivate those drugs in Paterson. He got them somewhere else. So is New Jersey going to go to Central America and South America or over to Asia? Because according to this logic, their jurisdiction could be anywhere. I don't believe that was the legislature's intent. It's a tragic event that happened here. However, the legislature could change the law or need to change the law in order to address an issue like this. Nothing that Potts or Ferguson did happened in the state of, in order to be a strict liability drug-induced death, happened in the state of New Jersey. Therefore, the trial judge in the lower court made the proper decision.
Was your client prosecuted for distribution in New York?
No, he was not. He has not been charged. Because what happened was Waldwick Police reached out to New Jersey immediately when they heard information that Potts and Ferguson were the ones that sold the drugs to Cabral. When they went back into Paterson, they were arrested probably a day or two later.
They face charges under multiple other counts of the indictment.
Yes, Judge. Possession with intent for when they were arrested.
Other questions, anyone? Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Neary?
Chief, how are you? Justices, I will take your admonition to heart. It's no mistake and it's no accident that 2C1.3 on territorial jurisdiction is at the beginning of our criminal code. It is a foundational principle, basically, that we prosecute those crimes designated here in the state of New Jersey and not try to reach extraterritorially, to use a word. It's almost as if here, the notion of comedy between two states, the comedy here is that New York State, their police, had no ability to prosecute strict liability. Why? They don't have a statute. Their legislature has chosen not to have a statute. Their criminal code, by the way, does include distributions, and by the way, same thing for Ferguson. She has not been charged in New York. They actually have a criminal negligent homicide statute in the state of New York, which we don't have, which they could have relied upon. But when I used the notion of comedy, New York called New Jersey, said, we can't prosecute. So can you prosecute for the death of Mr. Cabral? Now, the argument should be made and recognized both by Judge Bennion and by the appellate division that this is a tragedy. It's terrible. Judge Bennion, I was a trial lawyer, actually turned to the family in the courtroom and expressed his sorrow and that he would not affect, that he did not choose to offend anyone with regard to his decision. But he relied on the strict principles of territorial jurisdiction. Conduct results. It's distribution. Unfortunately, it's the injection. And most unfortunately, it was the death. And that all happened in the state of New York. Comedy and lenity should not be confused. We do not have a lenity problem in this particular case. The language of the statute is very clear. Distribution, statute. They chose not to say possession with intent. Our legislature clearly chose the word dispense, manufacture, or distribution. Now, my sisters from the Attorney General's office have argued to this continuing principle. As my brother argued with regard to the federal case down in Florida, that's really a venue case. Who's got jurisdiction? The Southern District of Florida or the Middle District of Florida? That's a different principle than the very strict territorial jurisdiction principles that we are dealing with here. So I, not to repeat my brother's argument, but in fact, as tragic as this is, the crime happened in New York. New York doesn't have such a statute. Therefore, it should not be prosecuted here in the state of New Jersey.
Are you done with your opening statement?
I am.
Just a quick question. I know you referenced the purpose behind Section B.
Right.
But if I understand your argument, you believe you prevail under A1 and don't even get to Section B.
Absolutely.
Is that correct?
Chief. Absolutely.
Okay. Questions? Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Chief.
Mr. Shalom.
May it please the court, I won't plow ground already trod by my friends, but let me try and plant three additional seeds, because I think their analysis is spot on. Though I will say, just to that last question you asked, Chief, I actually think the case is properly decided under B for all three defendants, because I think the way three is read, if three applies, A1 does not apply. Right, the language is quite mandatory. Section A1 shall not apply when. And so if you agree that B applies with respect to Mr. Byrd, that's the kind of path to victory for all three defendants. But I think that the first key is one that Justices Albin and LaVecchia have hit on earlier in this argument, which is we're dealing with a criminal statute here. And so there are plausible arguments that can be made on both sides, on the construction. I think, frankly, Ms. McLean's is the best and the most logically sound. But you could find a rule of construction to support either argument, either that the conduct charge means any element of the offense charge or means the crime charge. But when you have a situation like that in the criminal law, there is no doubt but that the rule of lenity applies and it must be interpreted in favor of the defendants. That's point one. Point two, we're dealing with a statute that is unique in its broadness, its bluntness, and its harshness. And it's also a statute that this court has upheld in Maldonado. However, it has this very indefinite aspect to it, which is this element of unless the death was too remote in its occurrence or too dependent on the conduct of another to have a just bearing on defendant's liability. And we raise in our brief all sorts of reasons why we think that is a constitutionally suspect construction. But you need not decide that. What we ask you to say is, in any instance, assuming that the court finds, as the lower court did with respect to Mr. Ferguson and Potts, that liability does not attach, then with respect to Mr. Byrd, it cannot, as a matter of law. And we, in our brief, used the construction of upstream and downstream. And on further reflection, I think that's the wrong construction. I think it's about the direct and the indirect contact with the decedent. In this case, there is no doubt that Mr. Byrd had no direct contact with Mr. Cabral. And our position is that it is fundamentally unfair, and that is a piece of the just bearing construct, fundamentally unfair to punish the more remote distributor when you cannot punish the more direct contributor. The last point...
If this was heroin laced with some poisonous substance,
then there's a mens rea. Of course,
then,
I would concede
all of them would
absolutely
would be subject to a manslaughter charge, even in the state. You agree?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. That's for sure.
Okay.
Before I get to my last point, let me just address the question of the exception to the exception. Again, I think there's at least a plausible reading on both sides, and that has to count in favor of the defendant. I will tell you that the way I read plainly appears to declare the conduct is it must be explicit with respect to the extraterritoriality, but it doesn't need to be in the statute. So it could be explicit in legislative findings, it could be explicit in some sort of policy statement of the legislature, but it must be both explicit and it can't just be we want this to be really harsh. It has to be, we want this to apply regardless of the place of result. But that gets to my final point, which is that New Jersey is in a minority of jurisdictions that has these, what they call DIH, drug-induced homicide statutes. There are 20, according to the study that we cited in our brief. And, you know, when the Model Penal Code was talking about extraterritorial jurisdiction, it talked about other jurisdictions not believing that the behavior was, quote, sufficiently offensive to condemn. But that's not the case with drug-induced homicide statutes. Everyone agrees that this is behavior sufficiently offensive to condemn. Everyone agrees this is a tragic event and wants to have laws designed to prevent people from dying from overdoses. But a majority of states have taken what we believe is the more reasoned approach, and they've looked at the data that shows there's no appreciable deterrent effect to these strict liability laws. They've also looked at the data that shows there is a deterrent effect on Good Samaritan behavior. So states can say, we want to protect our folks by not having these statutes. And if New Jersey can superimpose extraterritorially its law, it is trumping the policy choices made by other states that have said, the way we want to protect our citizens is by encouraging people to call 911, not by having people afraid of doing a 20-year NERA sentence. And so even if New Jersey had explicitly said, we want to reach into New York, I think there are serious questions about whether it has the authority to trump the policy choices that New York has made to protect New Yorkers.
It's not just overdoses. The statute would criminalize an adverse reaction to the tiniest amount of the drug that is used. You'd still be guilty, correct?
Yes, assuming it's one of the controlled substances that are named in the statute. So
for the record, yes. In my hypothetical before, which did assume we were dealing with a New Jersey student who buys in New Jersey and takes the drugs back to his dorm in New York City and overdoses there, you would find that this statute does not reach that consequence.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And I would find it if the New Jersey student went to share with his friends, which, I mean, I think the irony of this statute is that while the legislative findings might talk all about, you know, kingpins and manufacturers and distributors, most often what these statutes prosecute are friends who share it with their friends, their loved ones. It's fellow drug users who wind up looking at really serious prison time as a result. Unless the court has any further questions.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Ms. Hunt, rebuttal?
I just have 3 points that I'd like to make briefly. The first, there's been a lot of discussion about kind of the rule of lenity and strict interpretations of criminal statutes, but I just want to reiterate that the state's interpretation of the definition of distribution is not, in fact, an interpretation. The plain language of the definition includes attempted transfer. So this is not an attempt by the state to kind of engraft language onto a statute where it doesn't exist. This is plainly in the statutory definition. And so for that reason, those concerns just simply don't really apply. Now, as to the idea that it's fundamentally unfair to hold a less direct distributor liable when the kind of more direct distributor cannot be, well, that's not unfair. That's precisely what the statute is kind of aimed at, is holding every single person in that chain responsible. That concern certainly doesn't apply where the more direct distributor is kind of avoiding liability on a technicality. It's not that, rat poison was added to the heroin, and so the more direct distributor can't be held liable. It's a jurisdictional issue. So I think that concern of fundamental unfairness really doesn't apply in these circumstances to Byrd. And as to the idea that different states have different reasons for enacting or not enacting the drug-induced death statute, New Jersey has that interest, and the legislature has expressed that interest in eliminating the use of New Jersey to manufacture and distribute drugs. Regardless of whether New York shares the intensity of our interest in that is not relevant. New Jersey has that interest, and the legislature has expressed it. And that's all I'd like to say, unless Your Honors have any other questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. McLean? Thank you. And thank you to all counsel for both the helpful arguments and the respectful use of time. We'll take the matter under